Yeah, if there's a particular type of story that you happen to really enjoy and it happens to be something that the market enjoys, then do it. Like, if you enjoy writing it and it's something that a lot of people enjoy reading, that's the best of both worlds. I write to market like every so often, right? But those books that I write to market, I also make sure that they're books that I enjoy reading and like they're books that I enjoy writing. It's just that they happen to like have a bunch of tropes that I know will succeed. They're not the weird gremlinish tropes that I happen to enjoy on the back.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything lit RPG, progression fantasy, and Royal Road.
All right. Hi, and welcome everyone to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that is insane enough to invite four people to a round table. With me today are my good and dear friend, Haylock!
Oh, God.
Also joining us is Mr. Which Day of the Week Is It Because I Need to Write Another Book, Ravensdagger. How are you doing?
Not bad, not bad, not bad.
And last but very much not least is Maxime Void Herald. Oh, I have to get another book onto Rising Stars and then on Best Rated, Durand.
That's one baby before a few months, but thanks.
It's a long
Okay,
game.
so if you didn't join us last time, go and check out the last episode we did on characters. This is a, well, second round for the character podcast. This might be a bit quicker than the last one because we have, well, less questions, but we did get a lot of votes on the questions that we wanted to do. And at the end of the podcast, we're going to be revealing our new topic. So, last week we asked our Patreons which questions you wanted to see, and the results were pretty much this. So, we will read through all of them and then answer them one after the other. Do you
All
know
right.
a character's fate from the start or imagine as you go? Characters in lit RPG versus strat fantasy, what's the difference? How do you deal with character progression? How do you develop stats? Which goes a bit into system crafting, which I also want to do a series about. And then, how intentional are you when choosing a main character? For example, have an idea or and go with it versus crafting something to market. Those are very good questions, I think. So, it's not the first one,
Most
the
complex.
highest rated.
The last one is going to be the most complex. So.
Yes,
Yeah.
very much. Yeah, because it goes into, well, yeah, writing to market. And that's hard to answer.
So.
All right. So, characters fade from the start or imagine as you go. I know what Ravensdagger is going to say.
Yeah, I can from previous discussions, I kind of know what others are going to say here as well.
Okay.
All
Have a go.
right. So I know that Void is very much a plotter, right? So he does his whole plot outlines and everything, and he writes his characters in consequence of the plot. I do the opposite. So we're on like opposite ends of that spectrum.
We yin and yang. We complete each other. We should do a
We're
collaboration
exactly
sometime.
perfect. So yeah, I'm very much a imagine as I go writer. So I'll start with a vague idea of what the character is like, and like a decent idea of what the world is like, and I'll just let the character's personality build up as it goes. Different ideas will pop up sometimes, and that'll shape the character. A lot of times I'll just have like a flash for like some cool background detail. I'm like, oh, that fits this character's personality so far, and it makes sense. And I'll just add that into the story and develop that as like a main thing. So yeah, I'm very much an imagine as you go person.
Writing by the seat
Yeah.
of your pants.
Yeah, but I agree. I'm kind of the opposite when I craft a character. Like, I know the character's fate, or at least how they will either die or complete their character journey in a way. Because that's kind of a way for me to know well where these characters and where the story is going in terms of direction. Like some details might change, but usually, unless there is like I change my mind because there is some that because some character is like super popular or something. This has happened. There were some characters that were that intended to be footnotes that ended up becoming super popular and that ended up liking a lot more than expected. So I gave them more importance than what I had planned.
I don't understand.
That's happened to me as well a few times. Yeah.
I thought that like when characters get super popular, it's just that much more fun to kill them.
You sometimes would think that.
That reminds me of Fujimoto, like the writer of Chainsaw Man. He had a character Paul, and he chose to kill the. He had two characters to kill, and he chose the most popular one of the two for that because it will hurt readers more. I'll say I'm not saying it's fun, but it's definitely a risk. Like in some cases, it has. I've killed some characters that were like super popular, or at least that readers expected to stay to the end, and I think it really stuck in their mind because it was like tragic, like you know that's like the ones that got away, you know, the way that makes them a lot more memorable. I think
that's also a risk, though. Like some people will read a story and they're going to like really be attached to a side character. And they'll read the story just for that side character's content.
Yeah.
And sometimes the side character's personality makes them like they would not be a good main character.
Yeah.
They're too weird or too bizarre. Or they're too strange. Like you could not have that character be the focal character of a book, but you can have a lot of them being on the side doing their own weird side character stuff. And sometimes if you kill off that character, you'll have a lot of like really upset readers.
Especially if considering that last time I think we talked about that we sometimes have our main characters be relatively stable, whereas our side characters then have like the emotional journey and people get invested into that.
I'll also add that the timing is very important. Like when it's near the end of the story, like some heroes dying or something doesn't really have the same impact that if they're killed in the middle, you know?
Yeah.
Because once you reach the finish line, you have like... okay, this is a bit like Iron Man dying in Avengers Endgame, you know. He died at the end of a long story arc. So the impact was that, okay, this brings the stakes and an epic closure to the end of the story. But I think that if he had perished like halfway through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, reaction would have been a lot different because his story wouldn't have felt complete and it would have been like killing for shock value, you know. Instead of bringing it to a natural conclusion.
That can seem very cheap.
Yes.
It can be very cheap. It also can be very effective. But you have to kind of weigh whether or not you want to have that impact on your reader. Like, is it going to pay off well enough to be worth the shock?
I mean, personally, I think... maximizing the amount of emotional damage I can inflict on my readers is the best way possible to think about it, which is why my novels go through the roof.
They don't.
No, and also that's a joke. Please don't think that's that. please don't read my books.
I can.
But yeah, Haylock had his mic down for a while. Oh, I think he brought it down. Say something.
Ooh. Oh, I just had the. I put it down so I could unmute it on the fly. I had nothing really to add.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, I'm sort of in between RD and so I'm somewhere in between. I like dance. I flail around in the middle, not really knowing where I'm going. I think a lot of the time, the main character's fate, know that from the start. That's important to me to understand. It slides around, but it's always going to be sort of the same endpoint. But side characters are just like chaos. Some of them I'll know straight away, like where they're going to be headed. I'll be like, oh, I'll introduce this prince here and he'll build up to something else. Other times I'll just throw in a throwaway character, and as you guys said, like people's reactions will be like, oh, like that was great, and that sort of like sparks an idea of where I could just hit something. Sparks an idea of where you can like take it. I really like that side of creativity. I think that's something that isn't really appreciated by many people. I love Royal Road for stuff like that. Readers like introducing ideas. It almost sort of feels like a collaborative effort.
Yeah,
sometimes, I'm not taking on every idea, don't get me wrong, but there's some stuff that, sparks creativity and it's like, oh, that's actually a good idea. Yeah. I'm muting.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, like Haylock has a bit of issue with his microphone. So if you hear any crackling noise in the background, that's
it's my voice. Max can't stand the Australian accent, so.
What?
It's fine. I understand. I'm muting again. Sorry, Max. Sorry.
No. It's fine. Like, it's not the Australian one. I think we established it's a Queenslander one. That's also not true, by the way. But yeah. Anyway, so I think we should probably go on to the next question because of time constraints. But in general, I do think it's a good point, and it goes a lot into plotting versus planning, right? Which is another thing I really want to talk about in a different series. I mean, I've gathered a handful of people who plot. So Nico Ligonella, for example, plots a lot. Void Herald plots. And most other ones are really just pantsers. But I think Ben Caray is also a plotter, but I don't quite know. So we'll see. So next one. This one is also a bit of a firebrand. Characters in Lit RPG versus in Trad Fantasy. What's the difference?
In my opinion, the problem with stats in terms of Lit RPG, that's an issue, is that the stories becomes about the stats. Once you introduce like a system or classes or the equivalent, the story is usually the world, everything in the world which is natural, tend to resolve around these stats. So their personality and their choices are heavily influenced by this instead of their own personal decisions or the world around them. Like, to give an example, I've done like Lit RPGs, and currently I am in more traditional fantasy, which is a bit more grounded. And I feel that in the second case, it's a lot easier to develop characters and their progression without having it feeling like video gamey. Like, how to say that you have characters, they're not trying to game the system usually, you know. They ever try to develop, they develop it naturally or with the information available. But when you introduce Lit RPG elements, inevitably it's going to be like Munchkins, where you are going to try to plan your actual character progression, your classes, your which skill you're going to take to anticipate. It's a really different mindset. That in one case, your character in Trad Fantasy are trying to survive with the tools they have, while characters in Lit RPG are trying to optimize themselves. That's the main difference.
I think that's a good way of putting it. I think from like more my perspective here, I think the focus in Lit RPGs is the progression, which is like central to Lit RPG is the character becoming stronger. And in Trad Fantasy, that is sometimes the focus, but what can be the focus is a much broader subject. Like, you can have Trad Fantasy that is progression fantasy, where yes, the story is about the character becoming stronger over the course of the story, and that'll seem very close writing wise to a Lit RPG, because you're just add stats and you have a Lit RPG out of it, right? But I think in like the other end of that spectrum, you can have a character in Trad Fantasy which is just a character going through like an emotional journey, a character going through like self-discovery, and you can touch on these things a lot easier without the trappings of Lit RPG taking center stage and forcing the story to be about progression.
I
would like to rebound on your point. I think that, as you said, like character in Lit RPG, becoming stronger, power becomes an end in itself. Like, you get stronger for the sake of getting stronger. Within Trad Fantasy, you try to get stronger to use that power to achieve a goal, like defending your village, saving yourself. It's like athletes and powerlifters, you know. You have one that trains to get muscles for the sake of getting muscles, and you have people that hit the gym to impress girls or or to win a medal or something. That's
or
really
not,
different mindset.
Or not suffer debilitating back problems. What?
Okay, there you go.
Actually, I think it really depends on how you categorize the RPG, right? Because for me, anything where the characters are aware that they have a stat system is a Lit RPG. And it doesn't necessarily follow that the main character tries to game that system. So think of, for example, about, I mean, this is the first example that comes to mind, he who fights monsters, right? The system is ungameable. Same thing, for example, for Reborn as a Demonic Tree. It's literally a gacha system at the beginning, right? The main character cannot game this. And the other characters have their cultivation cores and so on and so forth. And they're not really lit RPG. They're more like progression fantasy-ish anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think a way to write a good lit RPG that also has good character progression that isn't centered around numbers going up. And I mean, I'll just do this for funsies, which is kind of like a carryover from the, you know, old VR MMO days, is if you have a system that is descriptive rather than prescriptive. So a system that, yes, changes reality, but changes reality based on what your main character has experienced. So in Monsters, Shurlun talks a lot about how his system is a reflection of the characters that live in that system. So, for example, you know, Jason is like this dimensional warlock ninja, but at the same time, he's also like has this justice element in it. Humphrey Geller is very strong, and so he has a dragon persona, and so on and so forth. And yeah, those abilities all get stronger, but it's more like these characters' personalities manifest themselves in the world, and they have more tools at their disposal to really fulfill their own destiny. And I really like that idea, right? So I do agree with you guys, though. In many lit RPGs, it is, oh, wow, I can get stronger. Better go punch some goblins, which is also fun. And that's very important. That is a very different kind of pull than, you know, a character-driven progression. But at the same time, you can't, you know, have a story without character progression. So it's kind of hard to balance.
I will reformulate what I said. You can have characters with interesting motivation in the RPGs. I agree with you. I actually use the similar system to what you mentioned in Vanquer, where people don't choose the class. They can try to game the system, but the system awards them class based on their choice and decisions. However, the fact that you have in a lit RPG, like a god, that's what the system is. It's like fate or a god. That's basically the same thing. That awards you abilities or puts you in neat boxes means that characters are inevitably going to think in terms of classes or abilities over the characters themselves. Like when you have a protagonist that encounters a character in a lit RPG, the first thing that's going through their mind is that, okay, is this guy like an orc or like, is he working for this faction or something? Is going to be, is he a warrior type class or is he a mage? You know, the thing with lit RPG is that you are more tempted to put characters in very small boxes that are based on their class rather than their personality or their other choices. That can be interesting. I mean, you can introduce things like class discrimination, like for example, the fact that you have a lit RPG is, and that you have the thing with lit RPG is someone who is going to be level 50 is inevitably going to have authority over someone who is lower level simply because they can kill them immediately, which isn't the case in most settings because you don't when you go in the road the mayor. You don't elect a mayor because he can kill everyone in the city if he wants to. You elect the mayor because hopefully most people or vote for him and because he's charismatic enough to get people to follow him.
That but could be that's a cool plot idea, though. You know,
yeah,
democracy, the little RPG. The second you gain the system, you're out. You're out of the democracy. But the democracy like works on the collective strength of everyone. And it kind of like keeps all the others controlled. Could be really fun, but let's not talk about that too
could
much.
Could be an interesting system.
Yeah, right.
Like a social-based system.
Yeah, like it's the few versus the many.
Yeah.
Or like in deities, like in some lit RPGs, you have deities who gain more power based on their number of followers. Like, for example, they can draw more mana from them. That could be a similar system. But
yeah, the majority was something like that, right?
I think that was like a plot thing in a lot of early lit RPGs.
Yeah, like Konosuba or some of the Japanese lit RPG.
Yeah, I remember seeing like several they just had that in the background as a thing, where the more popular a deity was or the more worshipped they were, the more powerful they were.
But
hey, look. I think that's part of Japanese religion. The idea, like that's an actual idea that
more... the kami and
the Shinto, yes.
Yeah. Like the more popular a shrine is to a god, the more power they actually have. So it's sort of like a, if you're not coming, you're letting everyone down.
It's like, do you know this comic that has been going around on Facebook for a while, where it's this like weird forest god like bends down, dwarfs this like small human being and goes like,
"Yes, pray at my shrine. Come deeper into the woods. I'm one of the highest rated local deities with over 5,000 positive descriptions."
Yeah. I remember seeing that meme. Yeah, it's good.
That's fun. Okay. So coming back to the main topic though, characters in RPG versus strat fantasy. I personally think characters are always characters, but I kind of want to like annoy Haylock by asking him like, what do you think?
Yeah, sorry. I feel like with the broken mic, I feel like I have to like put up my hand like, hey.
I'm so sorry.
Excuse me, sir. I have an idea.
I'm sorry.
No. It's all good. It's broken hardware. I think it sort of touches on what you guys have mentioned already. To me, traditional fantasy compared to lit RPG or progression fantasy, the whole space, is that traditionally published books are generally, they have more of an internal flaw. I think we were discussing this a couple of weeks ago, Max, about that book, Take Off Your Pants, about plotting versus pantsing. It was tangential because the author went, like she said, you know, you're not going to find a single successful series where the character doesn't have a deep-seated internal flaw. We were kind of just like, well, our genre sort of breaks that convention. that's just objectively not true. Which, I mean, you know, from a traditional point of view, maybe she's correct. But you can sort of go, like, it's not to say it's a diehard rule. You still have lit RPG books where characters are deeply internally flawed. You do run the risk of it becoming like, of getting dragged through the coals, kind of like how Shirtaloon with He Who Fights With Monsters, like it's objectively like a very successful series, but you still see people complaining on Reddit saying like, Jason is so, like, I just can't put up with him. Like, what's wrong with him? Like the author is so politically charged. It's like, but it's not the author. It's the character.
Honestly, a lot of people read some stuff to complain about it. Like it's like,
that's very true. yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I definitely see that sentiment echoed. People don't like, or like some readers, a portion of readers don't like when your lit RPG character, you know, has some trauma or something that they don't like overcome by just getting stronger. Like our characters can be flawed by being weak, basically. Like their flaw to overcome is like, oh, well, he's not great. He's getting picked on by everyone. Like, let's make him beat everyone up. Let's just get him stronger, and then he won't be flawed anymore.
I think Andy was it who actually said something that I think we should actually mention on this show, on this episode. The idea of like flat character arcs, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You guys go ahead and talk while I'm looking for that quote, because it was a really, really good one.
I think the ones he brought up were James Bond.
Yeah.
In that, like, he just remains the same the entire time, but it's still an interesting story. And Jack Reacher.
Oh yeah,
Jack Reacher. He doesn't change. He's the same.
Yeah. A lot of action protagonists, they're the same character from the beginning to the end, and that's fine because they don't need to change for the story to work.
Yeah, a character doesn't have to be deep; they just have to be entertaining.
Yeah. So here it is, and it actually has a whole book thing here, and it says like how to write a flat character arc, part one, the first act, and then it's basically you have to have a character who doesn't change, and they have the truth already figured out at the beginning of the story, and then use that truth to help them or her overcome various external tests, right? So instead of, you know, characters with like finding a realization and going like, oh, I've been doing this wrong the entire time, or maybe I've been doing this wrong the entire time and I will continue doing it wrong. This main character like knows who they are at the beginning and they just kind of continue being who they are and sharing that truth with the world or imposing it on it. You know, like One Piece, for example, Monkey D. Luffy, he just goes, I'm going to be Pirate King because I like having friends just like my great idol Shanks, and I want to be the best. And that's it. That's his truth. Friendship is good, and if you don't like my friends, I'm going to punch you in the face. I'm hyperbolic, of course. But it works.
That's actually a fantastic example because Luffy has like a very flat character arc, but a lot of the other characters around him,
yes,
the side characters, have like really, really beautiful character arcs that are like really fulfilling, and they're like well-written emotional arcs.
Yeah.
And they work, and they're part of the crew, and then once their arc is complete, they become a flat character once more.
Yes.
But they stick with like the crew as like part of it, you know? It's a
And it
functions. It works.
At the risk of giving away a big trade secret, I really think that is the way to do it. If you're writing like in Lit RPG, which I think this kind of like means, right? Writing flat characters, have your character figure out the truth at the beginning. Maybe have a small arc right now. Like you don't need to spend an entire book like I did, but maybe you know have like a small arc that's like 10 chapters, maybe 20. Main character finds out, okay, cool, no, I will use this power that I just got from system for good. And then you have your other characters do the little side arcs and do the emotional stuff. Like as we talked about at the beginning, have those very, very good, well-rounded secondary characters that people love so you can kill them to inflict more emotional damage.
No.
Yeah.
Don't. No.
I disagree.
I got it wrong again.
You can have like the main character having a very deep emotional arc that is the core of the story. Like you have Berserk, like he gets struggles with his hatred, with his content, and it becomes a completely different character by the beginning and the end. The same even with large shonen like Naruto. At the beginning, you have like a brat that is yearning for recognition, etc. And by the end of the story, he has wised up into someone with a confident leader that realizes he doesn't have to prove anything to others, you know, and it takes an entire story, and that's compelling in itself. Like any structure can work in terms of narration, in terms of characters, etc., as long as the execution is good. Like there's no right way to do it. If that person is talented, they can, to go back to action movie, you can make even the most boring plot entertaining if you have like excellent choreography, excellent cinematography that keeps the viewer on the edge of its seat, and the same with writing. And by contrast, you can have something like The Godfather, where it's a really intense character drama about a lot of characters, as that can be just as entertaining and memorable as long as it is well done.
It just kind of depends on what you want to write, right? Like yours, Maxime, that are everything. Like, you know, pull it out at the beginning and have an arc and have it like a definitive ending. It's way easier. To write the secondary part, right?
Yeah, and you need everything to make a world. Like, it's. I think we all try to write something that we want to read as well.
Yeah.
According to preference. unless you're a masochist that try to hurt yourself. But I think like you have an audience for almost everything that can be wide or big. And as long as you do something that resonates with that type of audience, any work can become successful.
Yeah, I think so. Man. All right. Well, that being said, next question, guys. Well, how do you deal with character progression? That's a very open question. And I kind of have to discuss how we want to answer that, or which of the very facets we want to answer. Because this is a character progression probably on like a personal level, because we have the next one that is going to be developing stats, right?
Oh, so we probably don't want to talk about how we deal with like system-based progression, because that's the next question. We'll have answered it. So you mean more progression in the sense of like a character's growth over the course of a story?
Yeah, and I think it would be interesting to talk about these from both a pantsing and a plotting point.
I think besides like the pantsing plotting viewpoint, there's also the character who has, like we mentioned, character arcs earlier. Just like that. I have two Lit RPGs that are like relatively popular-ish, I guess. So in Cinnamon Bun, the character doesn't really progress. Mm-hmm. Like from the start of the story, Brock, she grows in the system. She gets a bit stronger. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the progress with that character is her making friends and mm-hmm. like her crew growing, visiting new places, seeing new things, mm-hmm. learning new things about the world. That's the main core progress. Mm-hmm. I think One Piece we mentioned earlier is very much like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's about onboard a new character, go through that character's arc, and at the end of the character's arc, well, you have a new friend. So you've grown stronger by alliance. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of the coin, I have like stories like Stray Cat Shut, where the main character's progress is like very easy to see, where they start off as mm-hmm. like weak, injured, poor, in a poor situation, uninformed, unskilled, and generally kind of crap, but they have a lot of attitude and like a lot of gumption.
Mm.
And throughout the story, that attitude, that willingness to do stuff allows them to progress. They improve their situation bit by bit. They grow used to their new reality, and then they push forward to become even stronger, even better. And it like they have goals that they're aiming to obtain, and they work towards those goals. So that's how they progress. But I think you can't just view character progression through like a single lens of like levels going up.
Mm-hmm.
It can be through the lens of like a character maturing, or a character overcoming a fault, or a character literally having a better position in life than they had at the start.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Very true. I mean, okay. Does anyone disagree with that?
No.
Then the question, I think then the question really would be, I mean, first of all, what do you want to say, Maxime? And then I think we should maybe talk about how do you make sure that happens in both like pantsing and polling mode, right?
But in terms of character progression, I think the core of character progression is or lack of progression is overcoming a core flaw or issue at the center of the character. Like there is, when you design a character, I think you should always start with a basic conflict. Mm-hmm. It can be like, okay, I want to destroy this guy to avenge my family. Or it can be something more complex, like I want to achieve enlightenment. So it can be anything. You have an external conflict that is about dealing with the world outside, but there is also an internal conflict. As in, how do you approach the problem? Like, okay, I want to take revenge on my family, for example. That's by killing the person who killed them or something. But on the other end, you can have an internal issue like, okay, am I ready to do everything for the sake of revenge? Like, am I ready to kill innocents to get what I want? And I think the core of a character progression is examining that conflict and whether or not the character becomes a better person by overcoming them. Yeah. But you can have negative character progression, like someone that, that accepts that, okay, I am no better than the person who inflicted that pain on me. Mm-hmm. And so I am going to ready to do everything to achieve that revenge. And in the end, you just repeat the cycle. That can be a good story in itself. But I prefer to have like someone that take a good look at themselves and by facing the obstacle in their way, whether they're moral challenge, physical challenge, the real purpose of like fighting an enemy is to grow from it. Like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. In terms of progression, I think that you have to look at the character's moral conflict and see how it will change based on the obstacles they encounter along the way. Mm. That's, I think, the core of character progression.
Mm. But yeah, one way I found it described was to kind of look at what's the biggest lie the character tells themselves, right? And I really like that idea because it clicks together a lot. Like if you're looking at, I don't know, there's so many movies and now I don't remember any of them. But basically the idea of if I only do X or get X or X happens, then everything will be fine, mm-hmm. right? And this lie often hides a deeper truth, a deeper need underneath it. So going for your example, like if I only avenge my family or take revenge on my family, whichever it will be, then I will finally feel loved, secure, safe. Like one of the basic needs basically will be met. There's like five of them, like, you know, prevention of harm, proximity, connection, all that kind of stuff. Go and check out psychology. The thing is, the character has to get confronted with two things if you're looking at the traditional arcs. And one is the frustration of their goal. Okay, I can't kill my family or I can't avenge my family because of X. Like person stands in the way or whatever. That's the general thing of like, what do they want and why can't they get it? But also, and I think this is sometimes overlooked, is the evaluation of their goal, which is what you mentioned, Maxime, right? So is it really true that I will feel safe once I kill my family? Mm-hmm. And then if they go like, yep, totally. Those fuckers are going to die. Then, okay, cool, right? That's that. But then if they realize like, no, if I kill them, then they won't really change anything and I have to change as a person and find a new goal because like basically that's what it is, right? If I have a new core goal, I will change as a person. Then I will do that, right? Yeah, the whole idea of what's the biggest lie to tell themselves is a very helpful way of writing. But yeah. Hey, Locke, did you want to say something? You mentioned something.
No. You guys covered it.
God damn it. Next time,
you guys are good.
You know what? You're going to start on the next question. Like, this is it. You're putting me on the spot.
I'm just like, yeah, it's quiet. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, just as eloquently. Thank you.
I invited you for a reason because you have things to say, Haylock. All right, let's go. Cool. Next one. How do you develop stats? Well, Haylock, you as a cultivation writer have lots of things to say about that.
Yeah, this is so easy for me to answer because I just, my stats are as vague as humanly possible. I don't like being constrained by a really defined system. Even if I know exactly where it's going, I like the freedom of being able to not limit the narrative in any way. Maybe that's more like about the actual system itself than developing stats. But yeah, I don't know. So in Heretical Fishing, right, I made it so the system was broken from the beginning. So the character, he was progressing. He was getting skill levels. Like it is a lit RPG as well. But every time he gained a skill, it would just say like, error, superfluous systems offline. And it became like this running joke of him getting annoyed at it. But the reader knows the progression because simultaneously there's like this annoying prince in a capital, like trying to hide from his duties and just reading it on a screen, like this relic powers up or whatever. It's all part of the story that's hard to explain. But he's informing, the reader is seeing his progression. They're seeing what he's getting. But the character is left in the dark. Those are the sort of ones I like to keep it. I wrote like a lit RPG before that, The Aggressive Attention, which is on Royal Road. But that was sort of the same when writing it. I kept the definition, like the system itself was very loosely defined. Just in case if I have any ideas or think of anything extra, I can sort of shoot off in that direction. Which is probably sacrilege to a lot of authors. Like, I know a lot of people like to really have these massive, you know, universe spanning. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but that's just sort of the way I like to do it.
So you brought up two types of stats, and I want to add a third. So you mentioned like stats that the character is aware of. So like the character levels up, and they're aware that they level up, or a skill has improved. They're aware that the skill has improved. I'm not sure if that would count as a stat, but I'm using stat to mean like a system-based improvement here. You have the type of stat where the character is aware of the statistical improvement. They're aware of the skill up or that they've grown stronger. I think there's a type of statistic where it's the one where the narration is aware of it, the reader is aware of it, but the character isn't. So a lit RPG is usually defined as a story where there's a system and the characters are aware of the system. Whereas a lit RPG without the stats is just a progression fantasy story, right? But it can still have a system. It's just that the characters are not interacting directly with the system and they're not aware of levels and stuff. So that's another kind of stat, right? Where your character can be growing stronger in that type of story. They're just not aware that there's a stat system like marking out how they've grown stronger. If you look at like the D&D novelization series, like Drizzt, Dragonlance, stuff like that, they're very much based on D&D. And you can kind of track what's happening with the characters if you're familiar with D&D. The characters are not aware of any stats or anything like that, and the stories are written like a normal narration. But there is that kind of underlying system in the back that says, like, okay, this is how these characters are progressing. So that's, I think that would be like the second type of stat. And to add a third one, I think, I'm not sure if this would count as a stat or not, but I think there's like a social stat that I like to conceptualize in a lot of my stories, where it's more about like characters' reputations and social capabilities within their universe, within their world.
And like, with factions, like for example, like Seer Standing,
or friends.
Friends, that yes. Some stories, it's not so much friends, but it's like literal reputation. Sometimes it's like a tier system. I introduced something like that in Stray Cat Start, where the different characters have like there's like a social media tier system that's like relatively complicated. It's like a very background thing. It's not important to the story, but it's like which person is more popular amongst the powered individuals in this world, and which one is considered like an S tier person. And that really affects, like, you see this in a lot of a lot of Korean stories actually have this for some reason. But it's like a tiered system of who people consider to be stronger than others.
Maybe that's because they're like careers.
Yeah, not of hierarchy. I was about to say that.
Yeah.
Okay, social stratification.
Yeah, so like a social stratification stat. And it might not necessarily actually reflect the real power of a character, but it reflects their social status. Which I think is something interesting. That's something that not a lot of lit RPGs have explored yet. But I do think it's kind of neat.
That's very neat, yeah.
Because like you can subvert it very easily, too.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit in in Iron Prince, right?
I think so. There's a few little RPGs that do similar things. Azeroth Healer actually had like a fairly strong component of it, but it wasn't laid out like a stat or anything. It was just like, humanity is aware of like different humans, and we kind of rank them based on how strong we perceive them to be. And it's not necessarily a tier system. It's not a direct social status system, but it is there. And I think I've always been fond of that kind of like non-system based system. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sure there are other types of stats.
Yeah. So it's basically the interdiegetic perception of the system. Or like the people that the system produces. Interesting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like let's imagine the most generic lit RPG possible, right? Character starts off level 1, and as they progress through the story, they level up, whatever. And at some point, they hit level 10. What if in your society, in your story, hitting level 10 is like, oh, you're now a tier 5 citizen because you've gained like a certain amount of skill. And once you hit level 50, well, now you're a tier 4 citizen.
Yeah.
And that's not actually part of the actual system. It's not part of the mechanical magic of the world. It's just a societal component of the world.
That's interesting, because I'm doing something like that in Band. You hit level 18, you're now an adult, right?
Yeah.
You hit level 50, and you're probably hitting midlife crisis. But like if you're level 100 or like even higher, you're like this kind of billion entrepreneur kind of character, you know, like running hundreds of startups and people know you and invite you to interviews. Cool. Yeah. That's a very good point.
Yeah, it's something that I've seen a lot of stories do. I don't think I've seen a lot of authors like specifically focus on that aspect of storytelling.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
But it is an interesting stat that as Lit RPG readers, we have like an advantage in writing that because we have a solid system-based thing that's like very hard coded into the story that you can base those social stats off of.
Yeah. I think Wish Upon the Stars fucks around with it a little bit.
I haven't read that one yet.
Mm.
But I would recommend on that. It's also because that go back to our point before is that when you introduce stats, you are immediately going to introduce a hierarchy of some kind between people. Mm. In your situation, you know, you have a hierarchy is more diffuse because you can't immediately know like the net worth or if someone is like the president of some countries or something when you see them. But in a world where you have like tangible physical power, it's like going back to the old days of humanity where the one with the biggest sword won, extracted money from peasants. It's really simpler to introduce that kind of hierarchy.
It's not the size of the sword. It's how you use it.
How many swords you have? I'll quote Stalin when the Pope complained about him. How many divisions does he have? That's the same thing for that.
Okay. Well, let's head to the next one.
Yeah, let's go.
This is the most complex one. How intentional are you when choosing your main character? For example, have an idea and go with it versus crafting something to market. And yeah, that's basically a question about, do you write to market or not? Or do you write Torchbearer?
You can do both.
Yeah.
You can do both. Thank you.
I've always really enjoyed the, I don't know who taught me this. So it's definitely an idea that I'm stealing because it's not something I'd come up with myself. But I can't remember where I'm stealing it from. So we'll just have to live with that. Somebody once told me, write one for me and one for thee.
Yeah.
So you write a story for yourself because it's like a challenge to yourself, or it's like it's what you personally want to read. And then you write a story for the market.
Oh, one for the art and one for the money.
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, another way of saying it.
Yeah. I think that's actually a fair assessment. Like it's a fair way of doing things because as an artist, you probably enjoy eating and you probably enjoy having a house to live in.
As a human, I do. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. So like, you appreciate those creature comforts, you know, like basic everything. You need to have something that's marketable, like that will generate some income for you. But at the same time, as an artist, you want to progress as an artist. You want to improve your art, and you want to write something that you personally will enjoy. So I think it makes sense to have like a kind of a switch back and forth. But you can also write something that you enjoy that happens to be marketable, right?
Mm. I would say that at the end of the day, we're all sellers, you know. Like we are actually trying to sell, even if we don't exact money from readers. We still, attention is like a currency. So if you want at least success or at least being heard, you have to tune your idea or be selective. Like if you write something about, I don't know, like a concentration camp that tries to get some people to escape, it's something hyper narrow and super dark, and that's not really mainstream, you know. That's going to be something that's not going to resonate, I think, with a lot of people. Whereas if you write an action story that has simple plots to get into and that is a bit more lighthearted, you're going to reach a lot more people. So you have to find a balance between what you want to tell and how you're going to package it, so to say, to the people who are going to read it. You know, to answer that, like how intentional you are when choosing your main character, I've actually tried both a bit. In that sometimes I have like I started with where the main character was the concept, like Vanquish the Dragon. The idea was having a dragon as the main character.
Yeah, I was going to mention Vanquish because it starts off with that rogue guy whose name I completely forget, and then you meet Vanquish.
Yeah, but like and, the, like,
you kind of have two main characters, because one of them is your, like, your point of view everyman character, and then you have a dragon who's not an everyman character at all.
Yeah, but like,
you kind of switch between the two as main characters, kind of.
Yeah, and because part of the thing is that if one of the issues I had with Anchor is was that the character was so alien in terms of thinking that I couldn't keep writing him, because I had it's really hard to, you have to do a lot of effort, you know, to think about old dragon with an immense ego who react to any situation. So having counter side characters that where they could bounce and back forth was something I came up with. But as in this case, the character is a plot. The whole idea of the work revolves around the character. Whereas in other cases, I wanted to write like a system apocalypse with Apocalypse Tamer that was focused on taming monsters, etc. In this case, I had the general idea of the world and plots before the character. And so I took a lot more time crafting the protagonist. I ended up deciding to write like a Nermit, and that would be like the antithesis of system apocalypse people. Like, he wasn't interested in going stronger at first. He just wanted to stay in his backyard and just weather the thing in survivalist. But that was the choice I made based on, on the sense of the market, but based on the audience. Like, it could have been another main protagonist, so to say, in that story. But I settled on this one because I thought it would be more interesting, both as a writer and that it would stand out from other protagonists, to say. Okay. So it depends. That's the answer for the question.
It depends, yeah.
It depends. I mean,
basically, yeah, it depends. That's what half of them come down to.
I mean, we talked about this too, Haylock, right, on Discord? A lot?
Yeah, a lot.
Probably because everyone's like, Max, write something to market. Finally, write something to market, Max. I'm like, I did. It's a very good book. Yeah. Like,
no, it's not.
Like, you're like, no, this draft will be to market. Don't worry. Trust me this time, guys, for sure.
Yeah, like, I'll just write it one more time. I promise.
Kay's in there pulling his hair out. He's you're making him go bald.
That explains so much. Sorry, what? Okay, no.
I used to have a full head of hair until, you know,
I just kept the Discord.
You just kept doing rewrites, and everyone just more fell out.
I'm sorry, Haylock. Yeah,
it's all right. It's fine.
But yeah, I think it was Neon Dreams, the author of Second Summonings, who I spoke to, who had like a lot to say about this topic. And I think that episode is going to come out either like in a couple of weeks or before this podcast. But he had this idea of having a flawed main character is fine as long as the flaws work with the lit RPG tropes. So, for example, I think in Second Summons, the main character isn't very likable, but the way she solves problems with violence is very lit RPG, right? So she is very proactive. She goes out, she kills people. She levels up, and she likes getting more power, but at the same time, she like very much has like a very deeply inset lie that she desperately wants to believe, like having a house and having family and being happy. But she doesn't realize that, you know, by becoming basically a mass murderer, that answer or that lie is going to disappear into the afternoon. And she's balancing on a blade's edge. And it's only a question of when she finds out that she will never be able to reach her goal and what she will do then. Because right now, it's like headed on a trajectory for a disaster. It's actually pretty well done, I think. So, but again, that goes back to what Maxime said. It's, do you want to write that story? And that's a good question. And I also liked your point about like one for me and one for these, one for the money and two for the show. But forgive me for saying this, it's easy when you're writing 7 books at once.
Yeah, it's much easier to say that when you have the time and ability to write more than one book at the same time. If you're just doing one book at a time, and it takes you like 6 months to write a book, which is like honestly, that's a fair speed, right? Like outside of like the our niche, no, not outside of our niche. Like one book a year is like a normal, like pretty standard speed. In our niche, in our niche, that's like you're kind of slow if you're just doing one book a year.
Yeah, like in our circles, I'm so slow, and in, like in my in-person writing groups, they're like, "He, look at him go! He's just done 2,000 words. Whoa!" I'm like, "Oh, Sean's just done like 11."
Pratabar rating 50,000.
Yeah, Sean is. Yeah, whenever he posts on Discord, he's like, "I got a new idea for a book," and one of his publishers, because he has many. Even though we started like last year, is like, hey, can you please slow down? We don't have the capacity for that many books. So that was actually pretty fucking funny. But I think to answer that question a little bit more for people out there, it really depends on what you want to do, right? So unfortunately, for example, I will have a job again soon. What do I want to do? Do I want to escape the corporate hellhole? I don't know what this job is. I'm being hyperbolic here. I'm very sorry if you listen to this being at my new job. Then, yeah, I should probably write to market and should make K novels very happy because he always pesters me about it and says, like, you should write to market. Idiot. I'm sorry, I will. I'll try. But if you just want to write for relaxation and, you know, publish a novel for, like, some fun and cake money, then write whatever you like. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to, like, torture yourself by writing something you don't like at least a little, or enjoy writing so much that you want to go back to it, that it's a relaxation and a hobby for you, if you don't intend to make a living off of it.
Yeah, I think that's that's the biggest thing, is we're all coming from the point of view of, you know, making a living and doing it full time.
Are we?
Which you don't, well, yeah, that's my assumption anyway. But you don't have to. Like, there's no rule saying you have to write with the intention of doing it as a full-time job. It's totally fine to do it. It's a wonderful hobby. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just pick whatever you want and go for it.
I would say the issue with online, when you write a book online, is that you immediately receive feedback from people. And it's easy to compare yourself to others, either because you are more successful or less successful. Like, the problem is that your perception of things is usually going to be warped if you go to write a road, etc. Because, like, for many people, having a book that has like 3,000 followers or something is relatively good, you know, in terms of content. But
that's really good.
That's really good. Yeah. Good.
But if you go and compare yourself to like juggernauts, like Beware of Chicken, who have I think he has nearly 30,000 right now, something like that. That's, you're going to feel like underwhelmed or think yourself that you have failed. And it's a bit like, you know, being on social media where you have, I have 100 friends and this one has 2,000. You're a social animal, so you're going to be tempted to compare yourself to those person. And that makes it very easy to like be discouraged really quickly, I think, for many people, especially beginners who don't really develop a thick skin over time.
I think
so.
If you're just putting yourself out there, consider this a hobby like any other. Just because some people are out there and it seems very attainable to have like this like huge success, you have to understand that, for example, Cultivation Nerd, like, is just leading rising stars with like 8,000 followers. That is insane. That is very insane. Like, that
this is not the standard. Don't look at that and go, that's what I'm going to do.
And even Second Summons, who had like 6,000 before it fell off or something, these people have written for years, right? I always like the idea of comparing writing to pottery because I do both. And if you're going to the pottery studio and like looking at these like fine vases out of porcelain with like glazing that just blows your mind, you don't go like, yeah, sure, I'll do that in a minute. I'll sell for like $5,000. Like, no, you'll make a cruddy, crappy little pot and it's going to be nice. You're going to share it with your friends and they're going to be like, oh, cool, nice. Thank you. I have a new pot now and I'll use it every day. And that's what it's about, right? Like, set your goals according to your skills and not the other way around, right? And the other way around will actually follow. This is really funny.
Or rather, start with false expectation. Like, especially when you begin, when it's your first work and you're not already trying to, okay, I'm going to get a bestseller or something on my first try. No, your first time, you should start with false expectation because you have no idea how things will turn out until you actually put out the work on the platform. And it's only with experience that you get you get wiser and you get more resistant. And like, if you're lucky, you're going to have a success. If not, you just are going to take a good look at yourself and see what you want to do, what worked, what didn't. But it's like one thing, very few people get it super right the first time around.
Hey, Locke, you want to say?
Yeah, I think like I'm always hesitant to say it because I don't want to discourage anyone from writing, but the learning curve is insane. Like, you know, I'm full time now, and like the first book just came out. But as my first book just came out on Amazon. But as we were talking about before the show, like listening to the audio, I'm like, oh my god, my prose sucks. Everything sucks. I'm terrible. I'm never going to be a success. You know what I mean? It's like you're always improving. And there's nothing to say that you can't have that massive hit immediately, but you should by no means expect it. And don't like if you set your standards really high, like you assume you're going to get something, it's going to suck when you don't hit it. Which, you know, is obviously right, but it's so easy to fall into this trap and sort of fall into a Dunning-Kruger effect and just assume that the first thing you make is going to be this, you know, amazing piece of art. But you get better, right? Like you release one, if it doesn't hit, you learned. You'll be so much better by the time you write your second one. Second one doesn't hit, you'll be better by the time you write your third.
And setting goals is making promises to yourself. I think I've said this like many times before, but I'll say it again. If you're setting a goal of like, I will hit number one Rising Stars, that's a promise you make to yourself, right? That's a promise that you as a like decision-making forebrain person make to your like amygdala and like emotional cortex. Like, it's going to be fine. We'll do this. They're going to be okay, cool. And then if you don't hit Rising Stars number one, which is completely out of your control, by the way, like I promise you, this is completely out of your control. Like I know several authors who are very, very big and they launch a story and it completely fell flat on their face and it never hit number one.
Right? That's happened to me a few times. Yeah. Like you mentioned hitting Rising Star. That was my goal for about a year, like 2022 to 2023. My goal was like, I want to write like a novel and I want to hit Rising Stars number one. It took me three novels before it happened.
Yeah.
Which one? And when it happened, there was like no major dopamine hit or anything. It was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And the payoff is so low too, right?
It's like, oh. All right. Yeah. That was cool. I guess there's a few followers more than whatever.
And the point is this. You want to set goals, A, that are not completely under control of other people. Like, I want to get this rating, for example, is a terrible goal. Why would you put your own mental happiness into the hands of people? Of like 15-year-old kids. I'm very sorry, you 15-year-old kids, if you're listening. This is nothing personal. But of like people with like, you know, having a bad day and a mouse. That's not a very good idea. Instead, you should probably try and stick to goals that you can influence, that you can reach, because then you're going to make yourself happier and you're going to stick around for writing a longer, and then the success will come by itself.
It sort of loops back to what Void was saying as well about comparing yourself to others. Like if your goal is to hit X amount of followers or X amount of this, you're setting a numerical value and you're like comparing yourself. Like you said, you're placing your happiness in the like. It's an outcome you can't control. If your goal and your outcome that you want to hit is to improve as a writer, like how are you going to fail? You know what I mean? Like it's wonderful to want to succeed. Yes, 100%. I hope you do. But you might just get discouraged and sort of be worse off for it if you have a numerical goal rather than a goal of, you know, making the best story you possibly can at this time.
Yeah. So in the idea of having an idea and going with it, but versus crafting, writing something to market to close that entire loop. It really depends. Do you want to do this for a living? If you do, then you probably have written enough that you don't ask yourself the question anymore. But otherwise, if you want to write if you want to do this for a living, then yes, write to market, but you probably will fail a few times before you actually do or hit. And otherwise, just don't write something for yourself and actually be happy with your hobby and don't think about monetizing your free time. So, yeah. Yeah, the idea of that, I think the Ravens, like I said, like is the best. Write one for yourself and one for other people. And if you can combine the two, like, for example, oh, I really want to write like a real murder hobo story, like shout out to Dakota Kraut, then write a murder hobo story.
Yeah, if there's a particular type of story that you happen to really enjoy and it happens to be something that the market enjoys, mm-hmm. then do it. Like if you enjoy writing it and it's something that a lot of people enjoy reading, that's the best of both worlds. I write to market like every so often, right? But those books that I write to market, I also make sure that they're books that I enjoy reading and like mm-hmm. they're books that I enjoy writing. It's just that they happen to like have a bunch of tropes that I know will succeed. They're not the weird gremlinish tropes that I happen to enjoy on the back. You know, it's like, you know, these are popular ideas that I know people enjoy. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to write something like that. But there are also things that I personally enjoy as well. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a bit of wiggle room to do both.
Yeah, yeah. There is.
I'll also add that the benefit of the post by post format, that was what drew me, that feedback, yeah, it can be negative if you go start with high expectation. But on the other hand, you're going to quickly see if what you have is going to please a lot of people or not. So like if you have a few ideas that you want to write, but you are unsure which one to focus on, you can just pause them and see which one people resonate with and go all in with the one that is the one with the best reaction. Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much.
Write 10 chapters of like 5 stories, post all of them and see which one works the best and go with that one.
Yeah, you can.
It's, like a marketing it's strategy, definitely yeah. something you can.
That's possible.
Yeah,
it's a bit extreme, but
the main issue is reputation. So yeah. Make a pen account. I don't have a pen account, but or like a smaller like secondary account, which is by the way like completely in terms with Railroad TOS. Like you can do that. That's a problem. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to have a reputation for being the author who starts 50,000 novels and doesn't finish them. Because like I think RD will say like you finish every novel, you start it, and then you have like a good end point, and that's the next thing I would like advise. Mm. Have an out.
Yeah, or like
yeah, have outs built into your story.
Yeah.
Craft a single volume that is complete in itself, but that can be continued if you
Yeah.
If you yeah, have more, I think more I think my readers are more or less happy with that type of thing. Before becoming like original fiction only, I used to write like fan fiction for like 6 or 7 years or so. Mm. And with that, there was like no real expectation of an end. Mm. So you just keep on writing until you get bored with the idea and you drop it. Mm. With original fiction, people kind of expect you to have like an end point. Like it doesn't necessarily need to be the end of the entire story.
Yeah.
But have a spot where it's like, okay, this arc is done. The story has gone for about 100,000 words, which is like chunky for like a sci-fi story or like traditional published, and in our circle maybe less, but you know, it's long enough to be like a book. And this arc has ended. I'm going to end the volume here. And if I'm tired of the story, I'll set it aside for however long. I'll write something else in the meantime and not come back to it later. Those breaks can feel really nice because you return to your own story. You reread your own previous work. You kind of get re-inspired by it, and then you want to write more. It's a mistake I found to write a story and keep pushing yourself when you're no longer feeling it, just because you want like the more follows or whatever.
Yeah, and the followers, like again, like the followers will return, and even then, this is not. I'm not trying to like insult anyone or anything. But Railroad followers don't pay you anything, right? Yeah, it can be a bit like a blow to the ego if you like lose 100 followers or whatever because the story is like going on hiatus. But in the end, they're not paying you, and yeah, your Amazon sales might also suffer a little bit, but if people like a story, they're going to buy a second book.
Mm-hmm. So. But I will also say that everyone can feel bored or, you know, have slumps, especially in a long-term project. Like when you write a book for months, etc., maybe you have a rush of excitation, but doing the same thing every day can get on your nerves past the time and you don't feel it anymore. Sometimes it's just a question of not being afraid to take a pause and recharge your batteries, get new fresh ideas, and then come back to it later. You know?
And most of the time, like, for example, my readers were completely understanding when I said, like, hey, look, I'm going to rewrite. They weren't as understanding when I said I'm going to rewrite again. But yeah, like, shout outs to all my commenters on the last update. You're right. I shouldn't have. I'm very sorry. But I'm writing book 2 now. I promise. I am. But yeah. Cool. All right. I think, Maxime, you needed to go at some point. But before that, I would like to actually talk about the next topic for the next roundtable, which I'm not quite even sure who I will invite for yet. The next topic is going to be starts. So how to start your story. So now we can all generate questions that we'll then toss over to the next batch of people.
Okay.
I'm going to answer this question, or to start your story. Just write it.
Just write it. Yeah, good.
Just write it.
I mean,
just get in front of the computer and do it.
How to start? Start.
Starting is easy, finish is hard.
Duh.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. I think I should specify. This is especially about like writing beginnings of stories.
Yes, it's not the mechanical how to start. Buy a keyboard, buy a computer.
In that sequence, right? Keyboard first.
Yes. In that order, sure. Yes.
Get a phone. You can write on your phone. Yes. That's why writing is such a good hobby. You can
learn
write.
How to write.
Get born. Yeah, that's a very good one.
Be born, yes.
Be born, yeah. Okay, so how about this? I'm going to flash through the next few minutes and we're going to like gather some questions. So get ready. Dear viewers or listeners, 3, 2, 1, flash. All right. So after a bit of aside and after talking for way too long, we're actually done with this.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, we talked for so long, Maxime just left. No, he had to go somewhere. He had to do something. But yeah, those are the questions. If you can see them, I'm probably forgot to expand the viewpoint. But those are the questions. And I really hope that you will consider joining my Patreon, because if you're on Patreon, you can vote on these. And I'm going to put them all up there as soon as this episode goes live. And you can vote on which you want to have answered. I'm going to collate them a little bit because some of them are doubled. Yeah. There you go.
There you go.
Thank you so much. Hey, Locke. Raven Stegger.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was good.
It was lovely really talking to you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You too, and... but you're not here. Oh yeah,
I almost forgot. Like, hey, Locke, this time, come on, you have like a redemptive chance. You can push your own book. Come on, do it.
Oh no, my first book, my debut novel, came out on the 12th of March, which it is now past. It's out. It's on Amazon. Heretical Fishing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is a cozy slice of life / getting dragged into adventure tale about a man who just wants to go fishing.
Instead of, you know, becoming the chosen one.
Yeah, look, you could have power. I mean, he has power. He could do stuff with that power, or he could just hang out, like make some crab friends, make some sapient animals as pals. Have a good time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There's otters. There's crabs.
There's an otter. There's a crab. It's a fun time. You should check it out. It's read. The Audible, amazing. It's read by Heath Miller, who apparently is me, I've found out.
Yes, Heath Miller is you.
I am Heath Miller, surprise. yeah.
24 hours confused.
Into, yeah, I'm 24 hours into release, and I'm embroiled in a conspiracy theory. Wonderful. I'm all for
Heath Miller, personally. Heath Miller woke up at like 6 in the morning or something and ended a promo post for Heretical Fishing. And the way he phrased it, if you didn't listen quite right, it sounded like Haylock was his pseudonym and it was his story.
Oh.
So now that's out there. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've been having a lot of fun.
Thanks, Heath, for being on. Yeah, I really like that. I really like what you did with your face. This is really nice.
Yeah, AI, it's amazing, let me tell you.
Yeah. All right. So, Raven's Dagger, you got about, well, half an hour to push all of your books. So let's go.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna need every second of that. No. I don't think I have anything too special coming out the pipeline soon. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be pretty quiet for a little bit. I have Evil Antagonist came out recently. That's going to be fun. Yes. I have 3 audiobooks coming out soon from Podium. Mm-hmm. Fluff 3, Cinnamon Bun 6, and Stray Cat Show 6. So all that coming out soon-ish.
I'm excited.
Sometime in the next 3 months or so, I think. So that's going to be fun.
Okay, so now I can actually do this. I can do this to you because you said that Stray Cat Strut 6 is one of the best books you've ever written, and I can't wait to listen to it.
If you've read Stray Cat Strut, Stray Cat Strut 3 was like by far my favorite until I wrote 6. And 6 is very much a kind of a downtime chapter. It's basically Cat is forced to go on vacation for 1 week. That's the entire book. It's like 1 week of Cat on vacation and like all sorts of disasters and like awful things happen. It's kind of a mix of like slice in life, less murderous alien stuff and more dealing with politics and blowing up politicians and handling that kind of stuff. And like all the background stuff. It was basically a way for me to bring in all these like things that were brought up in the previous novels that I hadn't like loose ends basically and just go back and like tie up all these loose ends and like collect every little facet and little thing that wasn't fixed and like touch up on them again. I had a lot of fun writing it. Book 7 is back. It's like a return to form. It's like back to like the normal storytelling, but like I think 6 will stand out to a lot of people. Cool. It's definitely my favorite in the series.
Awesome. All right. With that being said, also I think that Tire 2, the audiobook is out already, right? Or is it coming out?
The audiobook is not out yet. It should, it might be out by the time this is.
Ooh.
Maybe.
When's it coming?
I have no idea.
Well,
I think another month or so and it'll be done.
Okay. Well, maybe. Well, it's sometime at the end of April. So on my birthday, maybe. It's going to be nice.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. There you go.
The perfect present.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening and or watching. Please do like. Please do subscribe. Please consider Patreon, as always. It really helps out a lot and allows me to fuel my video game addiction.
He
it allows
really
me to do more of this because I actually need to work less if I hit a certain threshold.
He needs this. Come on. You can. You can abuse me. You can say whatever you want.
Yes.
I can take it.
Standing offer.
I've been on Royal Road for a while. I'm pretty good with, you know, written abuse. I think I can take it.
Mm-hmm. It should write a song about that. Call it No Self-Esteem. all right. No, joke aside, if you want to join Haylock in my Patreon and or just poke me and tell me that my book is awful, then of course. Go ahead. I'm always there and I always listen. You can also find my Discord in the description below and you can join that too if you want to talk to other people about writing and or this podcast and or fangirl or fanboy about any lit RPGs. Okay, cool. That's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We did it.
Woo-hoo. Bye-bye.
And I'll see you next time.